But for now, we're going to move on. Now, having said that, I do have one question for you, Dr. Pizzorno, before we forget. A few people wanted you to mention again the online book that you referenced, and so that people could actually write it down this time.
Okay, it's the authors are David Jones, MD, Lori Hoffman, MPH, and Sheila Quinn. And the book's name is 21st Century Medicine, and it's produced by the Institute for Functional Medicine. So if you just put on the Institute for Functional Medicine, it's in Gig Harbor, Washington. And again, you can go to that website and download a PDF of the book for free.
I love that, when you can download things for free. So in this section, there are a lot of people who have questions that have pre-selected questions, and we're going to get to all of them. So I ask that you keep your preamble very short, and then just ask your question. And then if we have time later for more discussion, we'll do it. But before we move into the questions, the specific questions, I'd like each of our panelists just to reflect for a moment on what their vision of integration is, because I noticed when I spoke to each of them on the phone that they don't actually have exactly the same vision, each of them, because they come from different perspectives. And so if we can begin with that, Dr. Pizzorno, maybe even give an example and tell us, what do you mean when you talk about integration?
When I look at integration, I probably think more collaboration than I do determinant integration. And that's recognizing that there are many kinds of healthcare professionals who each have skills, high-level skills in a particular area. And I think rather than trying to expect us to be able to integrate all these skills into one individual, we should actually have groups of individuals who talk to each other and collaborate over patients. When I look at an ideal healthcare system, I think it has kind of three components to it. One is a primary care. And that primary care that I see is an amalgamation of today's family practice MD, naturopathic doctor, and Chinese medicine doctor. I mean, can't you imagine a doctor like Dr. Ong, who also knows Western natural medicine altogether, applying more of the natural medicine approach first, but also able to make a diagnosis if necessary in a primary care environment. Then I would see our specialists being what we see now in conventional medicine as specialists. Most conventional medical doctors want to be specialists, so let them be specialists. And then the third component of it is public health. Because if you look at the advances in longevity over the last century, over 75% of it is due to public health. So I think we should be paying a lot more attention on public health than just intervention. So to me, an ideal integrated healthcare system looks at this kind of care. Primary care, which is much more natural in orientation, specialist care, and then public health.
What do you mean by public health? What's an example of how that could be different than it is today?
So right now, if you look at the healthcare dollar, I'll use U.S. numbers because I know those numbers. We spend about 5% of our healthcare budget on public health in the United States. By public health, we're defining that as things like contagion control, education, et cetera. But having served on the Seattle King County Board of Health for 6 years, I can tell you that when we looked at our budget, only 5% of our budget, so 5% of 5%, was actually spent on health promotion. So I think of public health, it's in a really bigger context, and that is not just contagion control, but also much more in terms of consumer education. But I'll go even further, and how about things like farmer education? So as you may know, if you look at epidemiologically worldwide, there's an inverse correlation between the incidence of cancer and the amount of selenium in the food supply. So what if we were to teach our farmers how to grow food better so that it had more selenium in it to decrease cancer? So these are, I think about a really aggressive public health that's looking at not just individuals' behaviors, but fundamentally changing the environment so there's like more nutrients in the food and less toxins in the air, water, and food.
That's not asking much. Maria? So the question is, what is integration?
Yeah. Well, that's not an easy question. And I think that having looked at the literature, there are so many different definitions that it's very hard to come up with one that's good and that's generally accepted. you see definitions that really talk about good medicine and about values, something like patient-centered, holistic, respect, and good patient-provider relationships. And there are also descriptions of integrative medicine that deal a lot more with how it's being done, the structure, who is working together, and how are they working together, how are they organized to increase health and well-being in people. So that makes it really complex. My own understanding of it, I wrote down with a colleague, Dr. Tarn, a couple of years ago, and we identified different levels of integrative healthcare, and that started with integration at the personal level. People can combine different types of healthcare for themselves because they use different things. Then we felt that the consumer was pushing integrative healthcare, because if they want it, they will impact on practitioners and urge them to work with people with different professions as well. If practitioners are starting to do that, then it's clear that there is a need for clinics where those different types of practitioners come together and collaborate and work with patients who really desire that type of care to increase their health outcomes. If that works, then of course larger institutions such as hospitals will say, well, we need something like that in our hospital, and our institution needs to be integrated because clearly that's what the public wants. End up, go to professional regulatory bodies and in the end to policy levels. Now, I've started to realize that the lower levels do work. I think there is a demand from patients that has an impact on healthcare. But we see almost something like a downward pressure, policies that are changing and that do not make it easier for integrative healthcare, institutional environments or clinics that do not really work or do not have enough funding to function as they wanted to. So it's a lot more complex than I had ever thought before I knew all this or started thinking about it. But I do think it's a very important topic to talk about.
All right. Mm-hmm. And some of the questions that come will burrow into a few of those areas that you've talked about. Dr. Ong, what is integration to you? What does it look like?
I would say integration is a spirit of cooperation and creativity between two or more medicine and their practitioner for the benefit of their patients. Because you have to have cooperation with each other, you know, in the two or more medical systems. And you have to work together for the benefit of the patient. That's the key. You know? And another thing I think about for the integration is integration of the old traditional and modern medicines. And then, of course, it's far better than one medicine only. And then just like a house, I have mentioned before, you only have one door to come in. It's dangerous when in fire inside, you're going to run out. You have to have many doors, many approach, many way of coming in. Then this house is very safe. So integration means it's integrate in between the traditional, the old, and the new together is far better than one medicine only. And integration have many level of integration, like Marjorie had mentioned already, that professional level of integration, they have a personal level, and they also have, I want to add one thing, is a social level also. We should have integrated medical center everywhere in the city that can provide the other type of medicine that can be treated. And then also for preventive purpose, just like yoga, meditation, qigong, tai chi chuan, whatever it is, you know, as long as they do good for the community and for the people, and then we should use it, you know. And then there's a lot of people always ask, which one should I try? You know, should I use this or that? I would say that the one that is available for you, the one that you become more interested in, is the one that you need the most. No? So, and also integration gives you multi-dimensional aspect of approach. You know, so that you know that there's no one way of therapy. There's many other way of therapy. No? And also give the option for the patients to choose, you know? And also healing is not just, you know, in one way of therapy. It have to be many way of healing is better. Not just like Jim had mentioned that in the past, that you have to practice yourself, you heal yourself, good. And somebody who know Qigong, and they treat you, and they heal you. And your environment also help to heal you also. So this is what we call the integrated, you know, multi-system, you know, approach, which is wonderful. I wish one day I'd like to see even in the hospital changes, even in the hospital practice, can be practiced in every unit. They not only treating the patient, and but also the department itself is healing the patients, just like GI department, you know, painted the yellow colors, and the kidney department green, you know, blue colors, and the liver department green color with the music. It was for the liver, for the kidney, for the spleen. So not only, you know, patient have been treated by the therapist, but also the house, the units, and then the, all the nurses and staff are all trained with Qigong and all the with compassionate loving kindness and all this. I think there's no way that patient cannot get better. You know, patient should be get better. No? So we have to looking for that way that can heal the whole body. That's why I wrote an article about how to create a healing place. You know, and this is integrated healing places, not only in the Western technique, but also in the other technique, Ayurveda, or maybe Tibetans, or maybe homeopathic medicine. And every medicine which is helpful for the patient, we should use it. The one that have least side effect and give the most benefits and the most simple one is the best one.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Gordon?
Yeah, the aspect of integration that I'd like to emphasize is the integration in each of us as a practitioner. This is the precondition. Integrative medicine, yes, it is about bringing all of the world's healing traditions together in different combinations for the benefit of others. But the fundamental vehicle for integration is each person who is offering this approach. And the word, it comes, it's a Latin integer, it's for the whole. It's just like holistic. And I think that's the part that we sometimes don't emphasize enough, that it is about our becoming whole, about our bringing into ourselves, Jung called it the shadow, taking into ourselves those aspects of our being that we've either denied or haven't ignored or haven't explored, so that we become whole people. And as we do that, then it becomes possible to use any modality in a very different way. And we will create the combination, the synthesis that is appropriate to us at a particular moment. So, and what we use may change as we change. There's a whole other thing we haven't talked about in terms of research is looking at the fit between the practitioner and what the practitioner is offering. So that's fundamental, as far as I'm concerned. That's where integration starts, that's what it comes back to, that's what ensures that it is not going to degenerate into a cliche or something mechanical. Mm-hmm. And that's what our continuing work is. One of the reasons that the work that we do in presenting an integrative approach to whole populations is successful is because we are working at the integration within ourselves and at the creation, as Stephen said, at the creation of a community of people who are working together, who are also in a kind of integrated and dynamic whole. And when that's presented to other people, that in itself creates the preconditions, the context, gives people the opportunity to heal themselves.
Yeah, because to be able to continue to evolve as a person and as a healer, you need that kind of support. That's what I'm hearing as I hear you talk. It's very easy just to get into your day-to-day work.
I think that's why gatherings like this are very important. And they're not just important for what any of us has to say up here or anywhere else. They're important for all of you coming together with each other, getting to know each other, and you know, and sort of expanding your communities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really sorry. Am I allowed to interrupt with a comment? Dr. Van Olm from Calgary. What Dr. Gordon just said really touches a strong note in me, because that process of integration, which I think indeed we all as physicians need to have going on inside ourselves, is something that I also try to help the patient achieve. And I think one of the things that is going to bring us all together as healers, and not just as practitioners, is that we integrate in ourselves, but also in our patients, all the options that a person might have to deal with whatever illness they may have. And that requires you to know the patient you're treating really well, which is an old medical concept that's sort of been lost in the fray of technology. And it requires you to have compassion and understanding and think outside your own discipline, and to have respect for all the other disciplines. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. We have a question from Trish Dryden. Trish, where are you? Just raise your hand. There we go. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thanks very much. My professional affiliation is as a massage therapist, but I work principally as an educator and as a researcher. And my question, it's a two-part question, and it has to do with the patient or client perspective in an integrated system. The first part of the question is, from a patient or client perspective, what would an integrated healthcare system look like? And the second question that goes with that is, are there key principles, therefore, that related groups like providers, regulators, system leaders need to adopt in order to make this happen? I'd be very interested in your response.
So from the patient's perspective, what does this look like? Who'd like to start? Dr. Pizzarno?
Well, this is Jim's area of expertise, but it comes down to communication, I think. And it's easy to say, but actually it turns out to be hard to do, because you look at people from one perspective, natural medicine perspective, for example, and those from a conventional medicine perspective, they may be saying words that sound the same and have the same meanings, but theoretically, but one thinks they're saying something totally different from what the other is saying. And something actually Jim has done is done workshops to help practitioners be able to actually effectively communicate with each other. And I think that's most important, because what do the patients expect? They want the doctors to talk to each other. They don't care about conflicts, philosophical, political, social conflicts. They just want the doctors to talk together to do what's best for the patient.
This is a small question that you asked. So when you say from a patient's perspective, so I'm thinking from my perspective, because I'm a patient sometimes too. Not a patient particularly, but I am, and I have been a patient. So what do I appreciate? And the first thing I appreciate is that the atmosphere is one that is warm and welcoming wherever I'm going, and that includes everybody in the place. One of the reasons that our work goes as well as it does is because of who answers the phones and who talks to people, and that right from the get-go, there is a sense that you are welcome, that we're interested in what you have to say, that we're interested in you. There are certain limitations to what we can do. Our work happens to be educational, so the model's a little different. But I think it's really important, and having that as part of the whole scene and of the ethos of everybody who is working together to provide care. So that'd be number one. Number two, when you go to see someone who we go to see people for different reasons. I mean, sometimes we go to a specialist, sometimes we go to our primary care doctor, sometimes we go to a counselor or nutritionist. We pick people out. So I expect a combination of a level of expertise in the person that I've chosen with a willingness to look at my individuality as a human being. And I had this bad sinus infection. I've got hearing problems. So I have an ENT guy. And interestingly, totally by one of those. His name is James Gordon Vapp. That Vapp is his last name. But we have sort of the same first two names. But I just knew him from a referral. He's a very decent man. He's very thoughtful, very respectful. He doesn't spend a huge amount of time with me, but he's never hurried. So that's what I would like from that person. I would like a system in which there is as little ego as possible in the practitioner. I had occasion to call a lawyer, and one of the questions that I want to ask her at some point is, do you think there's anybody better than you whom I should talk with in this area? And isn't it nice if you can get to somebody who either spontaneously will tell you that or who is very open to that question and won't take offense? So somebody who is, you know, as good as possible at what they do, welcomes you, is willing to look at you as a whole person, understands that something else or someone else may be appropriate. This is very, and understands the limitations and admits to the limitations of what they can do on the one hand, and on the other hand, comes down always on the side of hope and possible. That's when Sherry McGee and I were talking about this book of mine that just came out called Unstuck. It's about depression, Your Guide to the Seven Stage Journey Out of Depression. But the most important thing that I realized as I was writing this book is that quality of hope. When I was really depressed, and I write about this, I called someone, and he talked with me for an hour and a half or 2 hours on the phone. And he said, yeah, no, I understand. I've been through the same thing. And I really respected him before that because I'd read what he'd written. But I got that message. I got the message of hope. I got the message that we're both human, that he's not in a different universe from me. And I got the message that he was really there for me. So part of that being there is being open to the possibility that what I have to offer may not be the holy grail of what that person is looking for. And being willing, without ego on the one hand and without dismissal on the other hand, to help that person find what she needs. Now, at the same time, if you think about structure, and we're talking a little bit about structure, ideally you have people who are closely connected to you, either in the same practice or in the same community, whom you know intimately, either because you've been their patient or their client or because you have a real sense of what they're like, to whom you can refer. It can't be everybody's patient or everybody's client, but you have a real sense of of what these human beings are like, and you get feedback. Part of the way I do it is I learn from my patients about who's really good in our community and who's not, and for whom. And I help people make decisions. And this is where this whole cancer guides, sort of function comes in. I help people make decisions about what to do. And the issue is not staying with me or not staying with me. The issue is always helping them find what is most appropriate and most right for them. I also think that the first approach always has to be self-care. And I mean, unless you're bleeding out and you need somebody to suture your artery. But I mean, in most of the conditions that beset most of us most of the time, I'm looking for my integrative care practitioner to be prescribing self-care first of all. That, incidentally, would go a long way not only to helping our populations be much healthier, but to cutting our healthcare costs significantly. And then the next circle of what I'm looking for in integrative care are those approaches that enhance our capacity for healing and that require a professional. So it could be acupuncture. It could be a mind-body skills group. It could be herbal prescribing or prescribing of supplements where you really need somebody who's an expert, but where the prescription is not primarily, although it is occasionally, but not primarily a symptomatic prescription. It's putting me back in balance. That's what I'm looking for. And only if those don't work, going to the drugs and surgery, which are quite important, but are so grotesquely overused. In North America, as far as I know. So that's the kind of mindset that I'm looking for. I'm also looking for somebody who understands the power of groups to promote healing, and who has available to me a group in which I can learn self-care, get support as I change my habits. It's very hard. How many of us here have tried to make major changes in the way we live and eat and think and exercise? Yeah, right. Not so easy. So it's great sometimes if you have other people who are doing the same thing, and you can learn from each other and you can support each other. That should be fundamental a part of care, whether it's in cancer, as drugs, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, and as fundamental a part as mind-body approaches, nutrition, exercise, et cetera. That sense of group support is just absolutely vital. So those are just some of the images that come to me.
Good key principles. Thank you. And it just sounds like as patients, we need to have more confidence to begin with. There's a lot of education that has to happen there. For us to be able to take on self-care means that we have to believe that we can.
We have to, but that should be a primary function. Thank you. That's a primary function, is to educate people, regardless whether we're a surgeon or an acupuncturist or a psychiatrist, doesn't make any difference. Our work should be to educate people on how to understand and take care of themselves.
One person at a time. Thank you. Thank you for that question. And Stephen Segar, where are you? Thanks, Stephen.
Maria, thank you for the opportunity to ask this very esteemed panel this question. We have a lot of excellent practitioners in Canada, whether acupuncturists, massage therapists, dietitians, they're all doing excellent jobs, and yet there's very poor, if any, coordination. There's very little in the way of national standards. There's no provincial guidelines, and yet we do have some very well-organized national organizations which coordinate various cancer care programs in Canada. We are making some inroad into policy. There's a very important group called Cancer CAM, which is led by Anne Lice, and many people here are actually members, including Mara Verhoff, Heather Boone, Linda Bell-Neves. And recently we have written a chapter led by Anne Lice in a new textbook called the Oxford Textbook of Cancer Control, where Simon Sutcliffe was very generous in allowing us to have a number of pages where we can actually put forward some policy statements on integrative oncology. That's the preamble. The question is, in Canada, how can we enable a comprehensive integrative medicine program within provincial cancer care programs and thereby provide opportunities for frontline physicians, nurses, and all the many other practitioners, whether acupuncturists, nutritionists, et cetera, to incorporate their expert techniques into clinical practice? The big question.
They're all big questions. We can only do what we can. Maria?
Well, that really is a big question. I think it's also a very, very important question, but it seems to me that there is more information and more education needed to get people on the same page, because I right now I still think that integrative oncology for many people is a mystery, and even integrative care is not quite clear. And I really enjoyed your eloquent response, but it needs the long. It's not easy to explain people what it's like. But I agree, it's very important to start pursuing that, and the team could have been a good venue for that.
Talk about that education. People have said the word. What do you mean education? Of whom? How? How do you begin to shake it up?
I would hope to see that cancer centers tell people working there, tell people coming there that, for example, if they want to know more about integrative care, there will be workshops or there will be information sessions. I would like to see physicians and other allied health professions, CAM practitioners, being invited to sessions where they can learn more about it, where people who have integrative clinics or are involved in integrative oncology can share their experiences and share what works and what doesn't work. And that those experiences are incredibly important. Those that were not successful are probably equally important as those that are just hanging in there. information also for patients, because they don't always know what they're asking for. And if patients are able to verbalize what it is they need, then that will maybe draw the attention of the practitioners, of the decision makers, of the policy makers a bit more.
And you see integrative clinics, and you're saying these are the aspects of it that make it successful, that make it work and truly integrative.
I think that a clinic is a way to begin, and it's probably one of the forms that we have most experience with. But it ideally, it could also be in cancer centers, it could be in hospitals. It could be in different places. It could maybe, I think clinics would be a good start. And of course, we have even individuals who themselves are practicing integrative medicine and know what it feels like, what they are looking for, and they know what they are receiving. And they can speak to the values that are so important to them. Sorry, did you hear me? Because it's I have to almost sit on it in order to make myself heard.
Yeah, thank you. Dr. Puzorno and then Dr. Ong.
I'd like to thank Maria because I fully agree with her that the education part's important. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of policy. And I think one of the most effective ways to get policy changed is to successfully treat the policymakers and their families. So I have a couple stories. You probably see my style. I like to tell stories. So here's one story. We had a landmark achievement in Seattle area, something called the King County Natural Medicine Clinic. And what was remarkable about this is that it was a public health clinic that the chair of the county council decided wanted to make an integrated care clinic rather than just strictly conventional medicine as usual. And so we asked them to make this presentation to the King County Council. So we made the presentation to the council, which was very effectively done, and they voted unanimously 13-0 to fund this integrated natural medicine clinic, where they had a naturopathic doctor and a medical doctor co-direct the clinic. And what was remarkable about it, and this surprised everybody, because it was a very fractious council, half were Democrats, half were Republicans, and they never agreed on anything. So an enterprising reporter decided to interview each of the members of the council and found out that 9 of the 13 were seen natural medicine practitioners and hadn't told each other about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So they were seeing the benefits themselves, and so they said, well, let's make policy so it's available to other people. We had the same thing happen, and this is in the early 90s, we had the same thing happen at Washington State, where they were debating healthcare reform. And this is before the Clintons got involved in healthcare reform. And they passed, again, another landmark law requiring that all insurance companies reimburse all licensed healthcare professionals, whether conventional or natural. Well, why'd that happen? Well, it turns out the chair of the committee who's making the decision, his wife was cured by a cross-trained naturopath acupuncturist, trained in both disciplines, was able to do something for his wife that their family medical doctor couldn't do. So when it came time for healthcare reform, he said, we're going to include these people in the healthcare system. So I know it sounds not logical, not systematic, et cetera.
Opportunistic.
Yeah, opportunistic, whatever term you want to use. But the reality is, you know, the people making decisions have to experience it themselves or in their family to realize what a huge benefit there is here.
So in practical terms, do you actually seek these people as patients? Or when they are your patients, do you ask them to promote? Like, do you do anything actively with it or just be excellent?
Okay. So, first off, yes, be excellent. I mean, if this medicine is not helping people, why should it exist? Why should it continue? So, yes, help people. But also, you can be smart. So, for example, when we did this King County, now, I guess it's okay now. This is not public knowledge, but I guess I'll say it now since it's many years in the past. The chair of the council happened to know which diseases each of the council members were suffering. So when we made our presentations, we made sure we covered the diseases they were experiencing. Okay. So we made it very, very real. So, you know, ultimately, all these decisions on policy are made by individuals. So if you make it real to them, they will go to bat for you. I can give you a lot of other examples. So part of it is policy and the people making decisions. Understanding why this is important.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ong.
I'd like to emphasize on the preventive part of the things. I was thinking maybe a very important, like breast cancers or any cancer prevention, we usually do breast examinations and pap smear to make sure that, you know, early stages has been detected and all this. But we never look at beyond that level. That prevention is that we should give educations. You know? Just to give you one of the example, I was in the cancer conference in China, and then they were talking about the latest finding of causing of cancer in the breast is due to the lipsticks, lipsticks. It's quite interesting, you know. And then for other people to understand that, you know, you put a lipstick on, and then frequently, and then what happened is that when you eat something and they go into your stomach, when they go into the stomach, what happened is that the lipsticks and all these are heavy metals and all these, so they cannot come out from the stomach. And then from the stomach was blocked, and then going into stomach meridians and causing the breast, it's a more density part, so it become lumps and bumps and all these come out, you know. If on from the Western medical point of view, we cannot believe that because we don't see any correlation between the breast and the stomach. But in Chinese medicine, it's directly associated with the stomach and the breast, because stomach meridian cross the breast. So therefore, anything which is blockage in the stomach meridian, such as phlegm, such as heavy metal, everything is stuck. Where do they start? The whole meridian from the face, they're going down to the toe, only one part have lots of gland, which is breasts, you know? Mm. Then, you know, this is a very interesting. I was thinking that we have to be even prevent these breast cancers, not just only looking at the mass. By the time when you see the mass, biopsy positive, then you got all troubles come up. So you should be even treated starting from the lipsticks and all, you have to look into those, you know? No?
Dr. Ong, you've done a lot of integration yourself, and just talking to you before we got here today, you told me about experiences you had with Western doctors and in some ways needing to convince them or to talk to them about what you do, and you've had some success at that. What's your advice to people about how to work with a practitioner who doesn't have the same worldview as you and to have them come around to, and especially if they're skeptical of what you're doing? Do you have any advice about how to do that?
The best way to do is you should share your information, not to argue or not to say that you are wrong, I'm right, you know. And then that's blockage the chi in between the two. So you have to respect the other people's opinion. You also have to share your opinions. And in that way, the person learn faster than, you know, that thing. I still remember when I first came to Edmonton, and I remember that in the Cancer Institute, I was sitting in the back, and then the people were discussing about how to treat these patients and all the, what should we do and all this. So they asked my opinion. I said, if I were you, I'm going to treat with acupuncture for this pain because the less side effect and all this. And everybody just looking at me just like a poison arrow, no? this guy. So I can feel it, and all energy coming right to me. Then I give them blessing. I said, I better be gentle and quiet. But again, I want to share with them. I don't want them to think that I'm not part of them. I'm part of them also.
So now you teach acupuncture.
Yeah, I think the best way to approach this kind of condition is you should never argue or never send negative energy. Give positive energy, loving kindness to your friend. Because they don't understand you. That's why they were looking at you as differently. Once they understand, boy, they're your friends. And right now, I have lots of friends everywhere I go, and nobody tell me that this guy comes from Chinatown or something like that. No?
Yeah, that's
I was a bigger quack in Edmonton in the past, 1976 and 77, 78. But I was very low-key and going, and that make it more successful for me.
Yeah.
One brief suggestion, Stephen, in the question you're raising. As Joe says, is policy, and it's political. And one of the ways to facilitate the political process is for those of you who are committed to this approach to get together and to formulate a set of principles that you want to advance, and to make it as clear a basic set that you all agree on. And then I don't understand the structure here, but I understand sort of the political process to some degree, and I understand that if you have that, if you have something that's clear, that's not too long, that a number of constituencies agree on, you're way down the road. And that's also, it's not only important in terms of a specific political advance, but it's really important in terms of changing the whole culture of practice, is bringing people together. I think it's really, I remember when you brought me to Toronto, I don't know, how long ago was that? 15 years ago. I mean, part of the idea is to bring create something where there's a focus, and then people can come together and they can get to know each other, and they can then organize afterwards. It could be something like what Joe was mentioning, that all kinds of people are interested in this work, but they don't know each other is interested. So if it weren't seven city council people, but if it were seven or 70 hospital staff, you need to put out the word. Mm-hmm. You need to say, this is what we're interested in. Anybody else interested here? And you'll be amazed at how many people are interested. And then eventually, you come up with a specific set of propositions that you want to advance. And the principles, in my experience, are the same whether you're in a hospital setting, whether you're in a city or state, or whether you're working at the national level. So,
John Yang.
Thank you, Maria.
You're welcome, John.
I have this opportunity to ask the question of the panel. My name is John Yang, and from PCU College of Holistic Medicine. I'm the TCN doctor and also a TCN educator. Among four panel experts here, I believe Dr. Ong is working as a physician, Western medical doctor, at the same time also serious practice Chinese medicine, which is appreciated. Very few physicians to do that in Canada. Now, this afternoon we're discussing the integration, this issue, and I believe most of them agree it should, healthcare system move to integration this more. I can see there's a problem here is that, as I understand, there is a fundamental difference between Western medicine and traditional Chinese medicine. This difference expressed in terms of the theory, basic theory, is different. And also that clinical diagnosis skill or technique is different. And it's also the mainly is a treatment detail, treatment mechanism, treatment methods are different. Mm-hmm. So now, are we talking about integrate to the one, healthcare system? The question here is that maybe for Dr. Ong and the more especially is how do you integrate these two different disciplines to your daily clinical practice? And also, another question is what kind of comments or feedbacks from your physician colleagues in terms of what are you doing?
So this is a nuts and bolts question. How do you do this?
John, this is exactly, I have to explain to you about my experience of my life, because that's the thing that I went through. In order to integrate the two medicine together, one have to understand both medicine thoroughly. If I'm only just superficially understand Chinese medicine and superficially understand Western medicine, I cannot integrate it. So in order to make this better, I have to train myself to be good and to be understand the thing. So whenever I see any patients, I always ask them to refer to me. rather than I just see patient coming out from somewhere, unless some of my good friends who are not well, I see them without referral. You know, why I did a referral is partly because I want the family docs to know that, all the specialists to know where is their patient is. Mm-hmm. You know, second thing is, I want to then to know that they come and see me, and then when I need some paper, I can ask them. And most of these Western diagnosis things are thoroughly done by family doctors or the specialists already. I don't need to go through the Western way. They are far better than me. No? So what I did when they come, I use traditional Chinese technique by using full diagnosis and all these to make sure that I have done my part. Then after I finish this, and I look at this, which organ system have been involved, or whether this is only just a blockage of meridian, or this is a deep level energy blockage, or whether this is due to constitutional problem, and all these. Then when I write letter to them or give them report, I tell them in Chinese way of thinking. I said, say the hypertension in Chinese means the liver yang is increased, and also this person also has liver qi has stagnant and blah blah, and then with depression and then like this. Then later on we become symbiosis. We're learning from each other. And next time later on when they refer to me, they are more Chinese than me, you know? And they write to me, Dr. Ong, my patient, her eyes are red, and her cheeks are red, and look like it's liver yang, eyes, you know? And then could you help us? We don't want to give too many medications, you know? So what I want to tell you is that we are learning from each other, and at the same time, we are helping each other out. Because of in the conventional approach, they not get better, so they come to you because they are referred by their doctors who feel confident that you will be helpful. So you do according to the traditional Chinese way. Because Western way already done, he have all the blood tests are done, all the EKGs are done, everything is done. That's the beauty of practice, integrated medicine is, and they have done everything for you. There's no physically have problem, or physically have some problem, they refer now. But what you need to do is you need to do concentrate on traditional Chinese medical approach, and then you treat them. And I found fascinating thing about these things is that when the Western medicine has a difficulty in the cases, and the Chinese medicine and other medicine can be all helpful. No? And then when Chinese medicine have difficulty, we send it to our colleagues in the Western medicine, and then they are also very helpful because, you know, you have checked it out already. Sometimes some patients come and see me, you know, and then I found out something around gallstones or something else. Then I send it back to the family doc. I said, your patient have joint pains. Of course, you do the gallbladder problem, but the gallbladder also have something wrong there. Could you see and assess to make sure? And in that way, the cooperation between the two persons and become very good friends, mm-hmm. and very good learning experience. I call it symbiosis. Mean both is win-win, and then the patient's happy, and the doctor's happy, and I'm happy. You know, and we are all happy working together and make the whole thing better. I think the best way of approach is to do it properly, everything. You know, and then to have respect to each other, and then you should be treat patient as it is your. There's a five words very important to deal with a patient. Is in Pali, in Sanskrit, we call mitta, karuna, sedna, mudita, ubhaka. Mitta means you have to have loving kindness. Sedna means you should treat patient without expectation. Number third, karuna means you should treat patient as it is yours. It's like your family. It's an older patient, your mother. It's a younger patient, your sister or brothers. And then mudita, means you only aim for patients and better. And upakha means you treat everybody equally. If you do the way it is, and then make the relation of healing become come up, like Jim said.
Thank you, Dr.
Relation's important.
Joseph Tai.
Thank you, Maria. The recently released CAMHS usage survey conducted by the U.S. National Center for Health Statistics show that in 2007, adults in the U.S. spend close to $34 billion out of pocket on visits to 10 types of CAM practitioners, and they purchases of 26 types of CAM products, classes, and materials. I would guess the same sort of a pattern of CAM usage is the same in Canada. Now, in view of the large numbers of CAM therapies and philosophies available, my questions to the panel are, number one, especially in the hospital setting, which ones should be selected to provide a fit with the orthodox medicine informing integrative medicine? Secondly, who should be making the decision? And number third question is, should there be a national committee formed to provide guidance?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody have thoughts about that?
I'll start. I think you're talking primarily about hospitals, right? I think in hospitals as well, the same principles abide, that self-care has got to be fundamental to the operation of the hospital, meaning that hospital workers, who are among the most stressed out and dissatisfied group I've come across, I don't know if coal miners are more so or not, I mean, they're really in a hard place, there has to be an emphasis on working with them to begin with, that we have to care for the people who are in healthcare. That has to be mandated. If I were, who should make the decisions? Me. No, I'm just kidding, but I'm not kidding. I'm saying we have to have some clear point of view. One of the problems with our healthcare reform efforts is, aside from wanting to cover anyone, which is obvious in any so-called civilized country, there is no other unifying idea. And part of the unifying idea is we really have to work for people to learn to help people become more healthy. So the hospital has to become a place of health and healing. That's number one. So for me, the most important things to bring into the hospital are education, training, support for all healthcare workers. Part of that includes mind-body approaches. Part of that is changing the diet. Getting rid of all those, I don't know how it is in Canada, in the States, virtually every hospital has junk food in the hospital, and then they're serving the patients junk as well. So that has to change. Those are the most, and the attitude that people too often have. There's no retention, again, I hope this is US example, staff turnover, nursing turnover is huge, because everybody's so dissatisfied with the way they're being treated. They're so stressed out. So we have to change the whole environment. We have to bring in the fundamentals of physical exercise, self-awareness, mind-body approaches, nutrition, and group support. That's fundamental for all staff. That's fundamental for all patients. That should be given to the staff as part of their employment. It should be part of the patient's treatment and absolutely covered for everyone. That will go a long way. Beyond that, I think there are many approaches that can be very helpful. And I think part of what we need is some large-scale experiments. A large-scale experiment bringing Chinese medicine into a hospital, but not just acupuncture, but Chinese medicine. Let's take it seriously. Let's bring in Tui Na. Let's bring in herbal therapies. Let's use those in conjunction with others, or sometimes preferentially. I was in China a few years ago, and I was on an oncology service, and they told me that a particular herbal treatment that they were using for one of the kids who had cancer, that they use this often. And I said, well, how well does it work? So they said, oh, it works better than conventional chemotherapy, but we don't use it too often. I said, wait a minute, if it works better according to your studies than conventional chemotherapy, why isn't this the primary treatment to use? And then if it doesn't work, you can use chemo. So, oh, yeah. So that would be the experiment, to experiment with what is it like if you bring in massage on a mat, on a really significant scale? I would do these experiments with all of the other approaches, and I would see what difference it makes. I would look at effectiveness. I'd look at cost effectiveness. So that's my response.
I think you ask a very good question, and I guess I'll come down pretty strongly on the side of standards. I believe that patients should have the opportunity to bring in whatever kind of healthcare professional they would like to help them in their care. But I think there should be standards for those professionals. If it's going to be a naturopathic doctor, for example, they should be a licensed naturopathic doctor. If it's going to be an acupuncturist, somebody who's probably properly trained and licensed. Because reality is, there are bad practitioners out there. Let's be honest with ourselves. There are people who are either frankly fraudulent or they're not educated, and they do indeed harm patients. And if you're putting somebody in a hospital setting, then you better know what kind of advice they're getting. So have standards. I think your idea of a national committee is a good idea, but let's make sure that national committee is appropriately balanced in its representation so that the standards that are established are appropriate standards.
So we've come to a situation where we're just running out of time. So if you don't mind, Dr. Ong, I'm going to move on to another question. And it doesn't look like we're going to be able to get to the questions that people wrote down because we've got just 10 minutes to go. I will try to leave time for at least one of them. But for now, I think we'll go to Stephen Carter because he has a question in an area that we haven't touched on much today. Stephen?
Thank you, Maria. Stephen Carter, Executive Director of the International Schizophrenia Foundation, which is focused on, for the last 40 years, on the orthomolecular treatment for psychiatric and related disorders. And this fits in nicely with everything we've been speaking of. In fact, you'll see. Following the recommendations of former Senator Michael Kirby, the Mental Health Commission of Canada was established in 2007. And while there is much good work being done by the Commission in reducing stigma and increasing access to services, it has given very little attention to the important role CAM can play in the often overlooked area of mental health. How do you view the role for CAM, with specific examples, in the prevention and treatment of mental illness? And what strategies would you suggest to encourage the Commission to incorporate or integrate a larger role for CAM into the existing programs? Dr.
Thanks.
Gordon, Dr. Pizzorno, all of, and you may not be familiar with this Canadian commission, but it's a very important step, but it's desperately in need of CAM.
I think it's wonderful. We actually must have met at our Food as Medicine conference in Florida. That was the one, not orthomolecular psychiatry. Anyway, I'm just ruminating. I think the role is absolutely central. I mean, I know for a fact, and I have presented the evidence that there is in terms of treating depression, that and so that's the area that I know best. To me, it is obvious that an integrative approach that uses modalities that fall under the rubric of CAM is the basic treatment for depression, for anxiety, and in fact should be fundamental to the treatment of all psychological issues, psychiatric disorders. And I think that for some conditions like depression, the evidence is very clearly there. And I think in addition to the evidence for individual approaches, what there is less of, and that's one of the areas in which we're working, is evidence for truly integrative approaches. And so I think part of what needs to happen is to begin implementing. What I'm saying is that each of many different approaches is just about as effective, if not more effective, than antidepressant drugs, with none of the negative side effects and many side benefits. I mean, the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to feel better and be more healthy, generally. But if you put them together in a truly integrated program, that's what needs to be recommended. That's what we're doing with the armed forces in terms of treating depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm saying forget about, it's not just about one modality. Whether it's CAM or conventional, it's about how do we put a program together. So I think that's what you have to do, and I think that you have to be very strong about it. You have to marshal all the evidence. They may say, well, where's the evidence for schizophrenia or where's the evidence for bipolar disorder? And I think there's less evidence, but there is indirect evidence and there is some direct evidence. And there's nothing to lose. That's the other thing. But what's the worst thing that's going to happen? The worst thing that's going to happen is people are generally going to feel better, and that you may delay putting them on a drug by a few weeks. So it's a no-lose situation. But I think part of what's happened is that in the psychiatry, with notable exceptions, and of course Abram Hoffer was one of those great exceptions, psychiatry has become more backward than the rest of medicine. And often psychiatry in the vernacular, has become more Catholic than the Pope. That is, less psychologically minded in many instances than family medicine or internal medicine or OBGYN or, you know, Chinese medicine. It's lost it. So that's what you're dealing with. But I think what you need to do is come together, present it very strongly. And I would also not present in too fragmented a way. I wouldn't be pushing for this particular intervention or that one. I would really be pushing for the integrative approach.
But why do you think psychiatry lags behind the other, so far behind? Why do you think that is?
Well, in the United States, clearly economics has a lot to do with it. I don't know, and also insecurity. Psychiatrists are insecure because some of us secretly fear we're not real doctors. A real doctor prescribes drugs and does surgery, and that's there. Also, psychiatry became infatuated with a very narrow understanding of what science is, and a narrow understanding of what neuroscience is. Which, unfortunately, most of medicine has a reasonably narrow understanding. But in the case of psychiatry, it's become, that's our field, and so we've lost, we've lost sight of the broader perspective for those reasons. I think the psychiatrist is a very fearful profession. They feel, under attack at times, under attack from within medicine, questioned from without, internally. Somewhat insecure, and that I don't want to get into this too much, but the true pioneers, people like George Engel, for example, who coined the phrase biopsychosocial model, or before him, Adolf Meyer, in the history of psychiatry, they had this broad perspective. And in order to look more scientific, people have narrowed, and partly because psychoanalysis didn't live up to all of its hopes, people have fallen back on this other model, and it's been really a catastrophe for psychiatry. In the United States, many of the brightest students who would otherwise have gone into the field, who are interested in all the things we're interested in, are going into family medicine or internal medicine.
Thank you. So that brings us to 4:30, which is the time that I'm committed to end this conversation. As much as we could continue going, we do have to get these four down to the gala. I suppose many of you are going to the gala tonight, and that begins at 6 o'clock. The reception begins at 6 o'clock. But I would like to say thank you to all of you for being here and ask you to join me in thanking our panelists. And may your conversations continue. Thank you.